part which will not be taken away from her. The Gospel of the Lord.
Praise to you, O Christ.
Please be seated. Oh, so we know this scene. We've lived it. Martha working, Mary sitting. We can feel the tension in the house. Hospitality in the Middle East was and is a sacred duty. Martha isn't just fussing over details. The family's honor is dependent upon them providing a wonderful meal for their guests. Welcoming a guest means food and wine and attention, and preparing a big meal is a lot of work. So Martha's tired, and she's resentful, and she's thinking to herself, why am I the only one working? Like, why am I the only one in the kitchen? Have you been there? Carrying an invisible load, perhaps, feeling unseen or unappreciated, or struggling to keep all the plates spinning in your life. You know, often it's not the work itself that wears us down, is it? It's the sense that we're alone in the work. The feeling that if we don't hold it all together, well, then everything will fall apart. In our workplaces, we are praised for working long hours and having constant productivity. And in our family life, we schedule and we serve and we juggle everything, and the bills and the deadlines and the appointments and the caretaking, and we feel the pressure to do it all and to do it all well. We live in a Martha world. Even when we rest, we're scrolling. Even when we sit, we're mentally someplace else. Underneath it all is a global exhaustion. The earth itself groans. Oceans warming and forests burning, and nations teeter under conflict and inequality and division, and people everywhere are crying out under systems that grind them down. And Mary, in the middle of all this, where is Mary? Mary isn't doing what we expect. Mary is breaking rules. As a woman, she was expected to stay in the back of the house, in the kitchen, and to come out only to serve. Sitting at a teacher's feet was a posture reserved for disciples, and disciples back then were always men. For Mary to stop helping and sit down was a bold and risky move. It's easy to romanticize Mary's stillness. Oh yeah, Mary's got it right. We can all just sit down and relax. But if we're honest, sometimes stopping is the hardest thing of all, isn't it? Because if we stop, then we have to face the things that we've been running from. We're going to have to feel the grief we didn't want to feel, or the fear, or the loneliness, or the resentment, or maybe just those uncomfortable questions that come up in the silence about meaning and life and death and purpose. We try to sit in the quiet, but the quiet doesn't feel quiet when we sit in it. It feels loud. Our mind races, and then there's the shoulds and the have-tos and the we ought to's pile up, and we start thinking about the email we forgot to send and the people we've let down, or maybe the goals we haven't yet met. We sit down to rest, and our own restlessness chases after us. It's like a man who said, I'm fine working 60 hours a week, but ask me to sit with my own thoughts for 10 minutes, and I'll do anything to distract myself. Or the woman, I can show up for everybody else, but the moment I stop, I realize I don't even know how to show up for myself. Stillness is not for the faint of heart. But stillness isn't a punishment. Stillness is the place where God meets us, where God lifts the weight that we've been carrying and pours strength back into our tired, weary bones. Too often we split ourselves apart. We say, be a Mary or be a Martha. Rest, work. Contemplation versus action. But the truth is, most of us carry both of those sisters in our hearts. There's a Mary part in us longing for rest, meaning, connection. And then there's the Martha part, pulled by deadlines and responsibilities and people who are counting on us. The world needs both. We need both. Jesus doesn't tell Martha to stop caring. He doesn't. And he doesn't say to Mary, get up and help. Instead, he calls Martha's name. Two times he calls, Martha, Martha. He says, you're worried and distracted by many things. And then he affirms Mary's desire to sit with him. And it's an invitation. He's not saying stop being Martha, but come and join Mary. Sit. Breathe. Be loved before you serve. Be whole before you work. Now, Mike's the kind of guy everybody counts on. At church, he's on the property team. You know him. You know the type. He fixes what's broken. He mows when nobody else shows up. At home, he's the guy that his family counts on for everything and leans on. He's hauling the kids' sports gear. He's handling the house repairs. He's caring for his aging father. At work, it's the same thing. Mike is reliable, steady, the one people hand the extra work to because they know he'll get it done and he won't complain. But lately, Mike's been feeling kind of stretched thin. He gets home from meetings or projects and he snaps at his wife and his children over little things. He's tired all the time, even when he's not doing anything. And the same things that used to give him satisfaction now feel heavy. He still believes in God, he still goes to church, but everything has become another task in his life, another job to manage, another duty to perform. One night after a long day, Mike drops into a chair at the kitchen table and he's rubbing his face, you know that gesture, with both hands. And his wife sits down across from him quietly. And after a moment, she asks, "When was the last time you let God take care of you?" And Mike couldn't remember. So the next morning, before the house was awake, he made coffee and he sat out on the back patio. No phone, no agenda, just him and the morning air and God. And at first he just sat there. He wasn't sure what to say. It felt really awkward. He's not used to showing up in prayer. But then finally, a simple, honest thought came to him and he said, "God, I cannot keep doing this like this." It's not magic. He doesn't change overnight, but little by little, Mike starts taking those early mornings, 10 minutes to sit, to breathe, to be still before he gets into all of the hectic to-dos of the day. And he stops saying yes to every single request, and he lets himself rest. And slowly something shifts. He can feel a shift inside of himself, and he finds a little more peace in the things he's doing and a little more purpose in the helping, and somewhere along the way, he gets his joy back. Maybe it starts small. Maybe it starts with just 10 minutes on the porch or a deep breath before a hard conversation. One moment of stillness in the midst of the chaos, right? But the small moments matter, and they pile up, and they become seeds of peace in a restless world, and they soften the ground so that grace can grow. Brian Stevenson is the founder of Equal Justice Initiative, and he tells a story from early in his career. He's working with people on death row. He says, "I remember one of the first times I went to visit a man on death row." He said, "I was young, fresh out of law school, determined to fight for justice and determined to win. And I walked into the cell, into the prison, carrying my legal pad and my notes and all of my arguments that I had prepared. And I was ready to explain his appeals process and the strategies and the motions that we were going to file. But when I sat down, the older man across from me smiled and said, 'Brian, I don't need you to tell me all that right now. I need you to just sit with me.'" And Brian says, "I was really taken aback. I thought my job was to fight, to argue, to work harder, to achieve more. But in that moment, I realized maybe what the man needed most wasn't just a lawyer. Maybe what he needed was someone to be present. So I put the legal pad down, and as we sat and we talked, and not just about the case, but we talked about him and his life and his childhood and his dreams and his fears. And Brian says, that day changed me. I began to understand that justice isn't just about the courtroom. It's about presence. It's about bearing witness to somebody else's humanity. Ever since then, I've been trying to remember it's not about how hard I work. It's about whether I show up, whether I slow down enough to see the person in front of me, whether I'm willing to sit in the hard places and simply listen. Imagine what it would mean, not just for you, but for the whole world, if we lived in this way. Imagine if nations learned to listen before striking. If leaders paused to weigh the human cost. If whole systems of labor and production were reshaped by the truth that people are not machines and the earth is not a limitless resource. Imagine the ripple effect. A world where people pause to listen, where neighbors look up and notice one another, where the grind no longer defines our worth. This isn't just about personal healing. This is about the healing of the world. And it's not just a dream or a distant hope, because this is what Christ is doing among us right now. Right now, Christ is mending what is torn. Right now, Christ is calming what is restless. Right now, Christ is strengthening what is weary. And Jesus, oh Jesus, Jesus is speaking your name tenderly, lovingly, powerfully, calling you not to fix you, but to hold you. Calling you not to burden you, but to bless you. Calling you not to add more weight, but to lift the weight you carry. Beloved, I see you, Jesus says. I see the miles you've walked. Let me hold the part of you that's tired. Let me steady the part of you that's restless. Let my peace settle into your bones, and then let my love stir you and shake you and move you to action. Because when I am in the house, when I am is in the house, there is bread for the hungry. There is rest for the weary. There is a peace for the anxious. There is joy for the brokenhearted. And there is power. Oh, yes, there is power. Power for the mission, power for the healing, power for the road ahead. Amen.